These are the Steamheart epilogues. So, Alex has mentioned in the past that there are voice actors that he would have wanted for certain roles in this book that he could not make happen. And there have already been some changes since the early days, such as changing the voice of Catherine Holloway from Sharon to Maya Cerise. Starting with Stone Spring Maidens, Alex has been adding voices to his cast for various roles. But are there any characters that you would want to be recast? Particularly if they are people you'd want to see again.
Again, a hard and loaded question that I don't know that I can give an impartial answer on, much as I do sincerely want to, because I have grown very attached to the characters in the form that they have had life breathed into them through these voices. Changing them makes for a difficult prospect to come to terms with, because I can't argue with the notion of bringing in more voices to expand what these stories are capable of, or in representing a character's background more faithfully or comprehensively, nor do I feel inclined to. But even though he is no longer around to participate in future events, the prospect of losing Alex's performance as Thomas Arlington is a sore one. Because Thomas has so much of Alex's frustrations and responses to those frustrations baked into his development and characterization, and that performance gives us one of the most personal and vulnerable performances in the roster. But of course, Thomas's frustrations do not entirely overlap with Alex's own, except through Alex's capacity for empathy with other people's lived experiences. So I can't deny the worth, hell, the need I have in my soul to one day hear or hopefully see a Black actor take on the role. That is more or less my feelings towards the original Phase 1 All-Stars. I love all of their performances. I am glad for the characters feeling the way they do thanks to their input into the writing and characterization process. But I am absolutely a greedy but welcoming fan, so if you're telling me that I could have more takes on these characters with a wealth of backgrounds to bring to them, then sign me up. And if you had to twist my arm, Raven is probably the one I would most like to see recast with a Native American actor portraying him. I love Alex's delivery on him, and with a heavy asterisk on my limitations judging this aspect as a dumb old white boy Brit, I believe that Alex does a considered and effective job giving Raven authenticity without veering into dangerous territory of unflattering or misguided imitation. But I love the character, I love the personality, and I think that Alex would agree with me that he would absolutely love to see a Native American actor take to the character and give him that life.
As I mentioned earlier, I finished the story of Echo, which I was very happy with some of the casting choices they made for that show. I loved having Graham Greene back and in his role in Maya Lopez's life. And like some of the other acting choices, specifically Native acting choices, were really strong. I don't know that I'd want to see one of them take on the role, but I definitely agree that recasting Thomas or Seth, I feel, would remove a little bit of the significance of what it means, what we have gotten into about Alex having a conversation with himself through those two specific roles. But in the case of Raven, if we were going to re-diversify later on, I'm right on board with you there that would be a key one to recast with a Native American bringing life to that particular character.
I mean, like, if we're stepping around it, here's the situation of it. New Century exists in the form it does now because this is someone's earnest attempts to do the story they want to see with mm-hmm. the resources that they have to hand. Mm-hmm. And I think that Alex has done a very good job at expanding his reach, his grasp of the number of names and people who are interested and want to get involved into this project to hand. So New Century exists in this form and has had benefit because of the personal investment that Alex puts into each and every one of these characters, including the ones that he doesn't voice. Just because he doesn't voice them doesn't mean that they aren't extensions of his own fractured yet whole psyche. But what you and I would love to see in the future, and like Alex himself has always said, hey, imagine if someone else did an adaptation of this story, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. And that's what we love. We love seeing stories that matter, that mean something to us, have different interpretations of them, have different approaches to them. Because if a story only must exist in one form, then what the fuck are we doing talking about Shakespeare like centuries after the guy died?
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we talk about these stories is because we think of new ways to breathe life into them, new things that make them just as valid as that original telling, because they become their own pieces of art. None of this is to deflect from the imperative to always try to like involve more voices, involve more backgrounds into any project, because it may be difficult, but it is how art grows and develops, and we push ourselves because this is what the gig is about. So if one day we are lucky enough that someone grabs hold of this, I feel like Nama is too much of a good boy to voice yeah, Raven. No. Yeah. Like,
I wouldn't mind if Nama recommended somebody in his sphere of influence to voice that particular role, because he probably knows someone in his personal circle that might have a really good voice for this kind of thing, or might at least have experience with acting out roles and everything like that. But you're absolutely right. Nama's voice doesn't quite have the gravitas and the capacity for assholery.
I love your voice. I just think you're the sweetest cinnamon roll that we have here in this extended community of ours. So thank you. And I hope that we can get you on to talk. Like what we were saying earlier, doors always open, and we would love to hear about your recent experiences with different books in New Century.
I do have some responses of my own to my own question, but before we get to that, I wanted to add the second part to that question, which was, which characters do you want to see most again? And are there people that you think have fulfilled their role and you're fine with references only? Well, obviously, I should have expanded on this question originally to say characters outside of the main cast, because obviously, we're going to see all of the surviving characters again, but go on and provide your original response to the question.
I'm going to stop saying, oh, that's a difficult question to untangle, because I'm just repeating myself now. It's difficult because a lot of the characters I would say are characters that I know return, though I don't think it's much of a spoiler to anyone who's read up to this point to say that the members of Team Steam, they come back. They have more stuff to deal with. And surprise, surprise, I'm very invested in these characters. So they are the ones I'm most keen on seeing come back. Beyond them, I think that the book absolutely leaves you wanting to know more about not just Seth, but the witch. Do we actually learn in this book that her name is Yagana?
Yes. Her name is name-dropped. I think it's kind of important, because the book does allude to the fact that her hut is on chicken legs, much like the character that is supposed to be referenced here, Baba Yaga. So the fact that she is given a similar name, but not the exact name.
So is she Baba Yaga? Nah.
It's her sister.
I said this on the Discord, and I will put it here for just for posterity, but my headcanon is absolutely that Bill Cipher and her have interacted and they play cards together.
I don't know if Yagana would have the patience. No, No, she would absolutely have the patience to interact with Bill because she'd want to know what she could get out of the deal.
I mean, that's the problem. Like, I think that they have both won rounds and they have both gained something and other people have lost things as a result.
Yes. neither one of them loses. Other people. Literally, Bill Cipher and Yagana, when they fight, we lose. No matter who wins, we lose.
It's just that the chips that Yagana pushes across are those various, like, little bottles that are on her shelf. And Bill's chips are just little frozen people who are just screaming.
Well, that's terrifying. Okay.
Yes, it is. All right. So, anyway, I want to learn more about Yagana. Even if there is an apprehension surrounding both Yagana and Seth, the Green Hollow fuckers, I don't think I need to see more of them. Rose is really the only named individual left that we would have to interact with. And I've already laid bare in our previous episode all the reasons why I think her ending is a fitting one for her. She did not experience death, but she did experience a symbolic death in the end of everything that she stood for. I think what I would expect to see is more characters who think like them rather than them specifically returning. The ominous feeling of the book's final encounter is not, oh, Rose McClellan may return, in the same way that we feel for that specific apprehension with Seth and Yagana, but more along the lines of, there are always going to be people like Rose out there.
There are always men like you.
Absolutely, precisely. That is the true sickness that Thomas Arlington was describing, that he believed was seeped into the foundations of America, of people that he spoke of in the handbook. So I think we are going to see more of their like, even if we don't see more of them specifically. And of course, I think that Malloy or Old Ned or Samson, whatever his name is this week, is also likely to return as well. I don't see how a strange mystery like them can't.
There are definitely characters which will return and we do see more of. I think that after having finished Steamheart back in the day, the person that I most wanted to see return that I wasn't sure would return was, of course, Rebecca Wolverton.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that we're going to be revisiting is the original interview that we did with Alex and Sharon. Those interviews, of course, have already been released, although at time of recording, I wasn't sure of the timing on this. And one of the questions that we asked is, which of the characters that you feel the closest to? And Sharon's answer was, of course, Rebecca. So I wouldn't want anybody else to voice.
I would like to add a new character to my list of favorites.
Yes. Yes. For many reasons, she is one of our favorites. But of the characters that are not part of the main cast, which I would like to see more done with, and potentially, if necessary, a different voice actor taking up the reins.
I may be the only one to feel this way, but I remember clearly even now how much I enjoyed that one chapter of Arlington where we got to meet Sean Riley, and I immediately recognized the voice of Bob Chipman because of the way he sounds when he emphasizes a heavy Boston accent.
I really enjoyed his character and the way Bob Chipman played him in Arlington, and he's just briefly referred to in this book.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I get the overall feeling like, as this proceeds, that the chance of his return in any significant form might go by the wayside, but who knows? We've got a lot of stories ahead of us. It's always possible.
It's the sort of thing that I think is like sometimes the practical realities of just life and the considerations that go into that do affect the final product of a story or of art. That's happened before. Like, we have that moment in the third Matrix movie because of circumstances that were out of the control of many of the people involved of, oh, the Oracle, why does she look different? Funny story, that.
Yeah. And
it happens. And I'm glad that the reason we may not be seeing as much of Sean Riley is not for the same reasons as the Oracle's face change. Like, the only reason is just people are living busy lives, then that's fine, you know?
Yeah.
I do agree. Like, I think that that kind of extends to the other character that was played by Daniel Floyd in Arlington. Mm. We hear reports of what goes on with these characters, but like, because the characters who played them and kind of played them so excellently, as we remembered, but like rediscovered on going to Arlington, it's almost as if the one scene we managed to get them for was so effective in the encapsulation of them that even if reality means that it's difficult to bring them back into the room, our head can kind of fill in the gap.
Obviously, I get that Sean's presence in the story was in some ways only functional. Someone to have on side and voice a laudable opinion to stand themselves out from the political opponent of Senator McPherson, or the moral opponent of Van Tassel and Fisher. But it doesn't change the fact that Bob hit it out of the park when trying to embody, just as Toby himself said, exactly the kind of person we want on our side. A teacher. You could also go on to ask, do I not want to hear the voice of McPherson again, just because of how well Dan Floyd delivered his lines? Did I not enjoy the gravitas of how Paris Lilly gave life to Frederick Douglass? And my answer would still be yes. But it's also true that Arlington as a story was trying to capture a very specific vibe that included the speechifying and the walking and talking about serious subjects that were the cornerstone of The West Wing, put a penny in the jar. I could, however, just as easily say that Alex told that story, and he's not interested in revisiting it, whether there's an issue with bringing those voice actors back or not. For Sean, my impulse is a little more complicated. That for all he was only around for that one major scene, Sean Riley embodied a feeling I want to feel again. A sense of decency and hope that is different from our other characters. Something that only a devoted teacher can provide. It reminds me not only of some of Bob's essays, but what it felt like to be a student under a teacher like that. He's someone incredibly intelligent, but also earthy, working class, a solid man that we don't always see enough of. And I suppose if you held my feet to the fire, he's the kind of man that I most identify with. All that aside, I really want to see more of Maya Cerise doing her thing with Catherine Holloway most of all, which is part of the reason I brought Sean up to begin with. Being the one that took Thomas's place, Sean feels like an ideal character that we could get some really meaty scenes out of the two of them, even throwing in a little bit from Truth, Conrad, and Corporal Higgins into the mix. Sure, the kind of work and maneuvering they do might not be as exciting as fight scenes, but I'm not asking for politicking as much as I am for seeing Catherine do what she does best, getting people to work together, talking, coordinating, inspiring. Sometimes keeping the flame of hope alive isn't sexy like punching fascists is. Sometimes it's just being the right people in the right place at the right time, doing a job.
All of this is me coping, and sometimes you just got to cope with circumstances.
I once said that if I was going to do any kind of New Century fanfic with someone that I feel relatively certain that Alex won't do anything in the future with, it was probably going to be Lawton Sadler, and that's kind of because he's already dead. It's weird how the man has sort of gotten stuck in my head just from his brief appearance in the Cartographer's Handbook as well as Arlington. But I one of these days I'm just going to come up with a small short story on the stuff that he was getting up to behind the scenes in Arlington and potentially a side relationship with Corporal Higgins, because that's just the way my brain works. But characters that we could potentially see coming back that could have narrative weight, but who could potentially be voiced by someone else. The weird thing is that two of them are voiced by my wife. Tabitha Chorley and Mary Sampson. Mary Sampson in particular, I would want to see recast with a black voice actress. But she left a significant mark, I feel, between her confrontation of Abigail in Secret Rooms and the way the two of them came to terms briefly at the end of Steamheart. I can't necessarily come up with a reason why she would leave her people in New Athens, but I like her character enough, and I just sort of have just like this mental image of her in my brain where she's like a young Angela Bassett wearing a Stetson, where it's just
that
like...
That works.
Yeah.
Or even more after a turn in Glass Onion, Janelle Monáe.
Yeah, that does work. Yeah.
I mentioned this in part because an episode on Strange Days is forthcoming. I've already paid Alex for it. And she just did an incredible job of playing an action hero in that particular story that I wish things had worked out differently and Angela Bassett had had a chance to do more roles like that.
It always feels like we never get enough Angela Bassett, as she was one of the best things about Wakanda Forever, and even turned in a memorable role in the recent movie Damsel that wasn't near big enough.
It's a shame, but yeah. If I were to see Mary Sampson come back in a different story, I would want to have that happen. Tabitha Chorley, maybe less so. I feel like maybe her story is done, which is why I was curious to see if you'd bring her up.
The Wendigos say, like, what about us? It's like, we know you're coming back. So
yeah, exactly. The Wendigos are... That's one of the few things that was not resolved by Steamheart, is that we got this lead up to, is there a secret story behind the Wendigo regarding how they're interacting with each other? And in this book, they were mostly just the faceless zombie mob that the team has to fight at one point.
I don't think there's going to be a future book in that. Just brushing the Nightfall of the Wendigo aside, no, there's absolutely no future book to go into with that.
But if there's one more character that is more than a bit character that I want to see more of, and that I would be okay with them changing the voice actor for, it would probably be Li Yinglong.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely...
Because she is definitely a compelling character that doesn't speak a whole lot, that we wonder more about what her backstory is, and I'm absolutely fine with Sharon's performance of, but like if we were going to get an AAPI actor in to voice Agent Li, then we probably should.
There are so many other characters that Sharon has a stronger emotional tie to that it doesn't feel the same as getting someone else to voice a character like Thomas Arlington just for the sake of racially synchronous voice talent.
Yeah, no, I don't know that there's really much else to cover with these characters without veering dangerously close to like spoiler territory. So
absolutely, yeah. So
we'll get to them when we get to them.
Absolutely, getting close to wrapping up here. Yeah, exactly. From a meta standpoint, what do you take away from 4 years of covering New Century and getting to our first milestone? How do you rate our ability to discuss these stories and its evolution from where we began?
What do I take away from it is several hundred hours of background listening material. So I rate us as good books done slowly. We have set up a methodical process that defies the conventions that most people would be predisposed to or encourage us to do for financial, practical, or more cynical motivations. But I take that as a point of pride. We talk for hours on a handful of chapters because we genuinely think there's that much to unpack. And why shouldn't we? After all, some television series will spend an hour telling a handful of chapters of a book that they are adapting. And the people who respond to that in online material will also take their time with it. Don't get me wrong, we're still slow as heck, but I take pride in doing these in no other way than our own. And we've only grown in confidence and ability to delve deep, not just within each chapter and book, but within ourselves. As I alluded to earlier, we could never have gotten to where we are now without the practice and the refinement that comes with walking the long road, rather than sailing over it in our last act flying machine.
You're just going to keep bringing that back, aren't you?
But it does bring it back. Like, it's always going to be something that, you know, you'll just look at the road traveled and think, you know, regrets. I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. We did what we had to do. We saw it through without exception. We planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway. And more, much more than this,
we did it our way.
I think the only thing that I would add, it's amusing because there was recently a Ryan George little skit that got put out, which made me think of this a little bit. We've done as well as we have with Through the Windor and all our tangential stuff because we do it because we love it. We're not.
I thought of you when I shared that. I thought of you.
Yeah. We're not doing it. We're putting it out for people to listen to. And if people enjoy what we have to say, then, you know, more power to us. But this is still a hobby. We're not monetizing this. We're not trying to build an audience. We're not trying to put as much stuff out there. We put this stuff out when we can, when we're ready to cover it, in our own time.
And that's why this episode is brought to you by Rage Shadow Legends.
No, for fuck's sake. If we're going to do sponsors, we're going to pick them out better than fucking mobile games. Especially Rage Shadow Legends. I pay $100 a year for the service that Podbean provides for the, you know, the expanded, like, able to post whenever I want, as much as I want. And I'm paying for that out of pocket, but I don't fucking care. If this builds to be something bigger, maybe eventually I'd put up a Patreon or whatever. But the reward for doing this show is the show itself. It helps me to put it out onto paper, or in this case, to audio format, and be able to think all the big thoughts that I have about these stories, and in the future about whatever other stories we want to cover, because we've got some stuff ahead of us that I'm really looking forward to us doing the dish on.
It's done in no other way than what it is.
Yeah, and just as Alex has gotten better at telling stories, we've got better at covering the stories. I'm fucking happy with what we've put together.
101%.
So we have two more stories, one much smaller than the other, ahead of us, that we have done no content on previously. No news of the century, no interviews. And after that, we're digging into books that we have already covered in some fashion.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
And I'm just curious, thinking about it, do you think the work will be made more complicated by our previous shows and or interviews? Or do you think that they help provide more fertile ground to help us dig deeper?
I mean, I honestly think that, much like for the stories themselves, things will feel cohesive with what has come before. But this is nevertheless a new chapter and phase that lies ahead of us. I don't think we covered any of those books in the methodical way that our main show content strives for, and I loved the reprieve that we got from allowing ourselves to do that for those news of the centuries.
Mm-hmm.
But the details are what I live for, what I know you live for, and all of that is ahead of us. So, no, I don't think that we're traveling over ground that we've already charted. I think that we are finally traversing those waters in the way that we have established for the first time. But we are also not who we were when we first started in 2020, as has been kind of the theme of not only this final recording session, but as we've discovered from like the process of it, this book itself, that we are not the people who start the journey that we have just recently completed. That notion is true. The idea that we are different for all of us, everyone listening to the show right now, but as fans, as a duo creating our own project, as the response to Alex's call, we are going to go into these next seasons with the priorities of 2024 and beyond. And I can't predict what that will be, but I'm excited to find out.
I think if I have one trepidation, I don't know if re-listening to old content in order to help prepare what we do next, and that's still a ways off, as I mentioned, 2024 is going to be, as you were about to get into, the year of Princess Thieves.
And already, I know that we're not likely to get done with the Princess Thieves and the Christmas Thieves by the end of December 2024. If that was all we had to focus on, that's one thing. But we will still be doing other shows. And on top of that, Alex is putting out the audio drama for Castle of the Moon sooner rather than later. Which means that there will be Behind the White Scars interviews, and also a further show on the story proper, entitled We Need to Talk About Magwitch.
As soon as we get beyond that, then we're going to have to re-listen to a lot of our old stuff. And indeed, I had to re-listen a bit to our original interview of Alex and Sharon post-Steamheart in order to prepare this final episode, seed the ground a little bit in terms of making sure that we didn't cover things that will already, you know, be gotten into in that interview and everything like that. I'm not sure if I'm going to view the effort of going back and listening to our previous stuff as being somehow more difficult about how, like, having to take notes. I don't know. I don't know how difficult it's going to be until I actually have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's best to sort of not worry too much about that, yeah, because we are not going to come up with the same points, because we are going not over overview, we are going chapter by chapter. Mm-hmm. So we have to, like, we can re-listen to those old, like, reactions and those old interviews and things. But, you know, I think that we are actually going to come up with wholly new observations quite organically.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah,
I have. It's been a long while since I've listened to any of the shows we recorded on the start of Steamheart, so I have no idea. But I have faith in us and who we are now, that what we would say about these stories right here, right now, is entirely its own. And it would be different to if we were to say it in a year's time or a year ago. It's all something that happens fleetingly, like tears in the rain, which is why I always say that please, please join us up here in the new century discussion pantheon. Yes, I'm calling us a pantheon now, like, deal with it.
Well, I think Alejandra is solidly the goddess of chaos, so I guess that makes Toby the god of trickery, and me the god of, I don't know, editing or something. Look, it may sound boring, but, you know, I'm just a guy doing a job over here. Weren't expecting that as a callback, were you?
Go, do a job, would you?
We are not the definitive word on this, despite me comparing us to a pantheon. I'm giving very mixed messages. It's near the end of the recording session, so this is why we need other people, because I will then up my game and do measures to make sure that I am lucid and concise and have clarity towards the end of these sessions. So no, I'm going to shut up now. No, I won't. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just going to depend on me and my editing brush to make you look good, as opposed to a rambling fool.
How fucking dare you? I'm done. All right. This is a good road. We had our fun, but I'm going.
I tease.
Abigail, close the window. I'm... Wait, what's this book on the horizon? Uncivil War? Oh, I see. No, Uncivil Outlaw? Why does this suddenly feel appropriate?
Okay, so does that mean that when we do our intro for Uncivil Outlaw, it's literally going to be the two of us going head-to-head?
Yeah.
Keep that idea for later.
Put that penny in the jar, yeah. So, can you believe we've done this entire recording session without having that phrase come up once?
No, there's really no overlap, I think, between the end of Steamheart and any discussion of the West Wing. So it hasn't
come up organically. Thereof.
Yeah. It hasn't come up organically. It hadn't been a component in the outline. So, you know,
of course, now this bit has been ruined because I couldn't resist saying the line during an editorial insert. Plus a soundbite from the pilot. It's my podcast. I'ma edit it the way I want to.
I'm just the guy who does the thing.
There's always some other reference to fall on here. And honestly, thinking about it, I'm not sure how relevant The West Wing is going to be for any of the future books that we have going for us. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah. Finally, what goals would you like to shoot for in 2024 and beyond to make Through the Wind Door and Beyond the Wind Door better shows?
Well, you know, it may be ambitious, but I would like to contribute to Alex's statement that 2024 is the year of the Princess Thieves. So to make that happen, I want to work through Princess Thieves for our next season, which is season 6.
Yes.
7? Yeah, it's 6. Okay.
Season 6. And obviously, we'll want to try and work through that quicker than we have, because as you're about to say, we also want to do Christmas Thieves as our Christmas special, which we were originally thinking about doing this year, but obviously, with how we fell behind,
It honestly, like, that has been something from, like, Jump Street I've thought of as, like, oh, well, we should probably do that as a Christmas special one year. But, like, it will keep. Something tells me that Charles Dickens's Christmas Carol doesn't exactly have a use-by date on it.
Especially when everyone's doing their own version.
Precisely. Beyond that, so to speak, I like the precedent that we set for ourselves in 2023. We got new voices in to help us talk about unexpected media that took our attention, as well as on New Century and shedding new light on that. And we also did some of my favorite content between you and me that we've ever put together with what became a mini series of Spider-Man 2 Proving Grounds. I know that you are keen to do God of War Ragnarok and already have some other people who may be interested in joining us on that. So
yes.
And I am halfway through the first game at the time of us recording this, so...
And if you haven't heard, Toby has finished both Ragnarok and the Valhalla DLC. We're not going to jump right into that, because Toby needs a little bit more time to digest. And honestly, I kind of want to get into at least the first couple of episodes of Princess Thieves before recording something else. But we'll get there.
I think that will happen at some point this year. Beyond that, who knows? I have a certain game series about light and darkness that I might invite Chris on for a show to bend your ear towards.
Oh boy, I don't know if my body is ready for that.
It doesn't matter, your body will be tied to the chair.
I see how it is.
You don't get to leave the Skype call until we covered the recusant sigil, Greg. One way or another, we have so much that sparks our interest, that ignites our hyper-focus fixations. And Princess Thieves, I am so looking forward to revisiting it and doing stuff with that. Beyond that, I just know that things are going to come up and surprise us, just as 2023 did. And this time in positive ways. I'm planning on moving to London this year, which is another reason why I think it works well that it's Year of the Princess Thieves, because you know, I will be coming on down to London Town, actually, quite literally.
Yes. No, absolutely. I can definitely agree. And we've already alluded to potential future works with Beyond the Windar that you and I will do. I've already got some things in the ropes.
Show now? Like, Greg is coming down with the ropes!
Uh-oh, my God, look at Seth Rollins. He's got Dean Ambrose up top. Oh, into the chairs.
Oh, my God.
Powerbomb into the chairs here. Oh, and Ambrose kicked out.
I've already got some things in the works with some other folks for when you're busy and just other things that I feel the urge to cover.
I only request that when you do those shows, just instead of it's your friends Greg and Toby, just it's your friends Greg and the cardboard cutout of Toby. Say hello, Toby.
Yeah, we're not fucking doing that again. I love a good bit as much as the next guy, but Windors are nothing to mess with. And I'm not taking the risk of a cardboard cutout of Toby turning into something worse than a Dalek. Fortunately, that's the last we've seen of Flat Toby. Although that reminds me, Kevin does still need to give me a watch list for Greg's Who homework.
Toby, I'm so glad to have finally come to the end of this journey with you, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
What is it that you always say, there are no endings, just new beginnings?
Well, technically what I always say is there are no endings because nothing ends.
Okay, this is how you know I haven't seen The Last Unicorn?
It was The Last Unicorn.
Yeah.
Technically, the line was actually in the book as well. Like, there's a good portion of The Last Unicorn that is just taken verbatim from Peter Beagle's book. Yeah, no, never mind. Don't worry about it.
Look, I tried to have an artful end to this long journey, and I failed, so...
Look, we had our serious ending with the previous recording. I don't mind that this final episode is a little ridiculous and loopy, because it actually sets up very nice for how ridiculous and loopy Princess Thieves is.
Okay, everybody get your best British accents ready, because we're going across the pond!
I think we're starting to lose the plot. Let's shut the window down, sir. Thank you very much for being my partner in all of this, and for all the stuff that we're going to go do in the future. I can't wait. I'm looking forward especially to doing this with you. It's just something as simple as you, me, and Maureen covering some stuff in the future, because...
Absolutely.
I know that she loves you, and she loves the way I am with you. In some ways, she looks forward to Toby time more than I do. So there may be a brief break. Don't know yet, as things continue to be hashed out from Toby's end. But we'll be back soon enough with Season 6 and the Year of Princess Thieves. Until next time. We'll see you around the multiverse.
Take care.
And that's it. Sorry it took us so long, but we finally completed our coverage of Steamheart. I'm sorry, are you waiting for something? Oh, right! So, you have a new century story for me?
Yes, sir, I do. Hey, shouldn't we be the same guy for one of these?
What do you mean, one of these?
Never mind. So this is the big climactic finale to my first phase of a multi-genre saga where we're going to cross over a bunch of previously established characters.
So like an Avengers?
What? No, this is nothing like it. Well, okay, it's a lot like an Avengers.
Oh, I knew it.
But I'm going to keep the audience on their toes, see, because I'll open the book by having one of the characters say that each of the main characters will gain something, each of them will lose something, and not all of them will be coming back.
Wow, that's a hell of an opener.
Right, really keeps you guessing as you read on.
Yeah. So is the narrator the one that dies?
Nuh-uh.
Ooh, that makes me think it might be.
hey, shut up. So this is going to be the culmination of what we set up in our first half dozen books or so, give or take. And we'll see a group of protagonists from each of them teaming up to travel across an alternate late 19th century America that's been messed up by a plague that sprang from another dimension into this one that turns people into Wendigos.
Amazing. Hey, does this mean we're finally going to get some answers to all those mysteries from the previous books?
You bet, sir.
So what's the Wendigo's deal? Are they zombies, werewolves, an alien hive mind, or what?
Unclear.
Okay. And what about Seth? Is he going to show up in this book?
You bet, sir.
So what's his backstory, and how is he connected to the Wendigo's?
Unclear.
So when you said we were going to get some answers, what you really meant is that there are no answers.
Now you're getting it. So we're going to take characters from this Southern Gothic Western, a zombie survival guide with the serial numbers burned off, a political thriller, and a dreamlike fantasy book about a purple tiger helping a human boy find his way home.
Oh, Tiger's Eye. I actually read that one. It's great. You're telling me Harrow and Miguel are in this?
Yeah, you like that, don't you? Well, you're in luck because you're going to get your Tiger's Eye crossover with the rest of the cast.
Oh boy.
In 25 chapters.
What?
Well, see, we're going to need to catch up on who these characters are in order for this story to stand up on its own, and while we can sort of justify it for all the other characters, there's just no getting around the fact that we have to provide an enrichment of the one book with the purple tiger and her adopted son in its entirety in a chapter that literally everyone, including the author, agrees is the weakest in the book.
What, so we're just going to listen to a couple voices summarize a book? Who could possibly find that entertaining?
Literally no one, sir.
So after all these summaries and everything, that's when we can get moving? That's when we can actually start this adventure?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Just as soon as we've done a little bit more setup in Washington.
Oh my god.
So Abigail and James have a meeting with Annie Oakley, Frank Butler, and the Arlington family, as well as Jeremy Pines and his partner Donald McTavish, about the starlit eyes they got in secret rooms. And they get to reveal that they think the eyes are connected to the wind doors that are responsible for this whole interdimensional mess and could be the key to closing them.
How do they plan on doing that?
Well, one of the Arlington daughters, Harry, is a mechanic and inventor, and she's built the perfect transport called Steamheart.
That's the name of the story!
It sure is, and it's a steam-powered vehicle for a group to travel and live on for missions like this.
Ooh, steampunk mobile bases are tight.
They sure are, sir, though that is kind of a problem for Abigail because she feels cramped in there.
Wait, so you introduced this wonderful-sounding creation that you named the book after to embody the heart and soul of the team, and you have one of your most central characters not be fond of it? Doesn't that run the risk of putting her at odds with the reader who we're hoping will be on board with this thing?
Well, I want to have some friction and tension in the team, you know? Not make everything smooth sailing and, you know, maybe introduce some fun sparks between some of the characters who have never met before.
Yeah, as long as we balance things out. Don't have Abigail butting heads too frequently, and it shouldn't be a problem.
She does it throughout the book, and it's a key part of her character growth to slowly building herself to be a leader and negotiator.
Really glad the internet hate boys haven't got a whiff of this yet.
So after that, we have a chapter about a public propaganda campaign to position a team as national heroes, and then a chapter about new equipment, and then a chapter about the ball to support the propaganda, and then a flashback with Annie Oakley because she hasn't gotten one yet, before we finally get to the launch party.
Hey, do we really need all this set up? It feels like we're taking a really long time to get this going. You sure we can't cut the ball?
The ball is one of the best chapters I have written throughout this series and must not go.
Jeez, okay, not the ball then, but what about...
Listen, sir, I'm gonna need you to get all the way off my back about this lead up to the journey, alright?
Oh, okay, let me get right off that thing there.
So after all that preparation and setup, including director Thomas Arlington telling Annie and Frank that they're there to shoot James or Abigail if it looks like they're endangering the mission or risking the endowments falling out of RSA hands...
Whoa, what? That's pretty messed up. Oh man, I feel intrigued and uneasy.
Well, get used to that, sir, because it's a defining feeling of this book.
Oh, I do not love that.
Anyway, we finally set off on the open road.
Oh boy, so what are we going to get up to now that the journey has started?
Well, one of the first things we get up to, apart from some conversations and details of their slice of life on the road as Team Steam, is their Native American journalist Raven, in lieu of spiritual advice to help James and Abby develop their connections to their new abilities, suggests that they go on a mushroom trip.
That's great. What a fun opportunity for our characters to show a side to themselves we've not seen before and have some laughs while we're getting some deeper looks at what lies underneath it all. See, this is good. We're finally doing some fun adventure stuff.
Until the trip comes down in a bad way and the pair feel more disillusioned and frustrated than they were before.
Oh my god.
And shortly after that, news arrives that Harry's parents, the directors of the RSA, have been assassinated due to a mix of political opposition and plain old racism.
See this? This right here? This is the opposite of fun adventure stuff. While you're at it, why not give me a nice paper cut and pour lemon juice on it?
So the adventure stalls because the mechanic and driver is in a deep depression over this grief, and the rest of the team aren't feeling too hot either.
That sounds like a harrowing experience. Do you maybe have some idea of how to perk them and me back up again?
Well, I'm going to have a group wander across this theater production that tells the story of Catherine Holloway from Weirwood.
Oh, hey, yeah, that's that woman from all the way back in that first boring book. The epic tale of Weirdwood.
Weirwood. But the story is told in a comedically exaggerated way that nevertheless has enough earnest material that it picks up the group's spirits and makes Harry feel better too.
A comedic summary of a story? Sounds like a good idea for a series.
I think somebody already beat us to it, sir.
Oh, dang it.
So after that, they make their way to the first wind door where they meet Tabitha, an enterprising woman who Abby met in her previous book, and turns out they had a fling together at the time that we didn't know about.
Oh, secret lesbian attractions are tight.
What a weirdly phrased yet enthusiastic response, but I guess you'll like what happens later with Harry.
Oh boy.
I can assure you no boys will be involved. Anyway, Tabitha escorts them to the wind door near her zinc mine, and Jeremy really wants to get a closer look, but it's too high up in the air.
Boy, it's sure going to be difficult for them to figure out their powers and use them on a wind door that's out of reach.
Actually, it's going to be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Abigail just uses some of the connections to unseen forces that she felt from the mushroom trip and just figures out how to close it not long after she arrives there.
Well, okay then.
But Tabitha goes into labor right afterwards, and turns out the psycho Mad Max group of racists are sieging the mine right as the baby is coming.
Oh my god.
So the group saddle up in Steamheart, the raiders pursue in their Mad Max carts and vehicles, and an eruptive action sequence emerges where James is delivering the baby on board Steamheart, Abby is leaping from vehicle to vehicle, punching and shooting, Annie and Frank are picking people off with their sniper posts on the craft, Raven constructs a Molotov, and Harry is doing some crazy maneuvers.
Oh wow, wow, wow. Wow.
So after the raiders are defeated and the baby is delivered, the team are feeling pretty good about themselves and the mission.
Sounds to me like the group is humming along great.
Yeah, but that's boring, so I'm gonna start introducing a bunch of complications.
What, Team Steam isn't allowed to stay happy for very long?
That's what we're going with. So first of all, there's unresolved sexual tension between James and Abigail that is made worse by growing insecurity at not being able to use any starlit eye powers.
Hey, yeah, what's the deal with those two? The story barely went into that so far.
What are you talking about? I made that all clear in Secret Rooms.
No, you didn't.
Sure I did. Look, here's the script for Secret Rooms right here.
Looks to me like there's 9 chapters of flashback stuff that wasn't here before.
Hey, shut up. So Steamheart comes to a town that includes the brothel that her mum used to work at, and that makes her super antsy.
Wow, I bet she's gonna stay away from that place.
Yeah, except that's when she meets a character named Agent Wolf and immediately finds out that they can't deal with the wind door till tomorrow, so she decides to go there.
So when you say there's complications, you mean that Abigail is the complications?
I mean, Raven also gets drunk, and he's not supposed to do that, so he and James have a fight, and we get to hear about Raven's traumatic backstory.
Well, stories about Native American trauma are pretty big right now. You think we could get an award nomination for including some of that?
So Abigail and Harry hook up and are a thing for a while.
Oh boy, according to the script, you've been hinting at this for a long time.
Yeah, well, don't get too attached because they will agree to break up before the end of this book.
What? But you put so much work into making this ship actually happen, and it's like one of our first prominent relationships between two main woman characters. Why would we break that up?
Abigail had a panic attack when trying on Harry's latest armor tech and repeatedly says that she's not fond of Steamheart because it's quite cramped.
Oh yeah, that was never going to work out long term.
But before that breakup, James also hooks up with Rebecca Wolverton from Let Them Go, who turns out is the Agent Wolf I mentioned earlier.
Wait, what's Let Them Go?
A book I wrote while we've been talking just now.
Well, I would ask what goes on in that one, but we're running long as it is, so can you summarize it for me?
I didn't like the textbook disguised as a novel being my introduction to this series, so I wrote a cool new one about a British lady with baggage.
Seems redundant to say a main character in this series has issues they need to work on, but we'll go with that. But wait, how did she get from where she is in Britain to working for the US government?
Well, it's been a long time, sir. A lot can change in 10 years.
I guess. Did she get up to much in between?
Nothing memorable. Had a nice bath at one point.
Look, this is great and all, but I'd really like to know when we get to the Purple Tiger. I was promised Purple Tiger.
Well, don't you worry, sir. The Purple Tiger is next.
Oh, boy.
After we have a big dramatic action scene on board the Natchez.
Son of a... Hey, wait a minute. That's the boat from Tiger's Eye. That's the Windorama.
It sure is, but Abigail doesn't know that, and when trying to close it, the boat starts breaking off and they have to run for their lives.
Yeah, but then the Purple Tiger and her kids show up and everyone becomes friends, right? Right?
Absolutely, sir. They all become friends really quickly, and we'll have a whole chapter... two whole chapters... three whole chapters of them all becoming better friends.
Outstanding. See, I knew this was going to be a great book.
So after all that socializing and team building, they're going to make it to the encampment nearest to the southern door, the place where all the Wendigos came from.
Ooh, so after all this build-up, they're finally going to go through the wind door?
What the hell was that?
Oh, that's just my personal band. They're trying out this new thing where they play specific music whenever I call a mimetic audible.
Okay, that can be a thing. So, yeah, they're going to go through the wind door. That's going to get old quick. So anyway, they're going to travel into this place called Saitash, and it's a super dangerous jungle that can kill you.
Oh, you mean like Rama?
Yeah, kinda, but worse, like, the plants are carnivorous and anything you touch can hurt you.
Gosh, okay. Maybe you should add before they go in, they get a bunch of red shirts that all die during the mission, so we can drive home how dangerous it is without losing anyone we like.
Way ahead of you, sir. I even got a fully named character from the first book so that audiences can feel like someone important was lost.
Yeah. And make it that guy that said the N-word, so we don't feel too bad. This book has already been super depressing.
Well, we don't want to depress you, sir. So after that, we're going to have a big climactic battle scene, and Seth and his Wendigo are going to attack, but Frau is going to give her life to save the team.
What? No, we just got the Purple Tiger, and now you're going to kill the Purple Tiger? No, I refuse. No dead Purple Tiger.
But sir, this is going to be the major turning point that leads into showing a divided group of heroes and how humans are the real monsters. You know, that thing that The Walking Dead loves to do.
Well, I do like doing the thing that everybody else does, but you got to do that without killing the Purple Tiger.
Alright, how about we pretend to kill the Purple Tiger and then she comes back to save everyone, like in Lord of the Rings?
Outstanding! And give her superpowers, too.
What?
The Purple Tiger is my favorite. I want you to give her superpowers so she never dies.
Jeez, if you love that Purple Tiger so much, why don't you marry her?
Hey, you know what? Maybe I... will.
If I do that, am I okay to make the rest of the book super depressing?
Yeah.
Well, alright then. So then Steamheart is broken down, and in the process of trying to fix it, they're taken into a small enclave full of misogynist racists that want to kill all the men and impregnate the women to make more babies.
Oh my god.
And then some of Team Steam get away with a hostage, but in the process, Captain Oakley is shot and dies, and Abigail feels super bad about fighting with her.
Oh, so this is part of the important character arc you were talking about. Well, that's okay then. That's fine.
Are you okay, sir?
Yeah, I just got a waterfall in my eye.
That's okay. I get energy from your suffering.
Sorry, if you just said something, I missed it.
So all of this leads to a big climactic showdown where Team Steam tries to escape Green Hollow but fails, and now they're facing off against a big RSA army led by Mr. White.
Hey, that's that scary guy from the end of Arlington.
You know it, sir.
So what's his deal? Why is he all masked up and hiding his identity?
Unclear.
Oh, great. So you're making even more mysteries that you're not paying off till later.
That's what we're going with. But don't worry, no one else important is going to die, because at the last minute, Harry is going to solve the mystery of the wind door and tell James what he needs to do to open one.
Oh, wow. So James saves the day.
Yeah, kinda. We gotta have one more tragedy to underline the danger of trying to solve problems with violence.
But the tiger lives.
She does, sir, and then everyone else goes home.
Outstanding.
After one more off-screen adventure that we won't resolve for 7 more books.
See, now you're just trolling me.
So what do you think?
Well, I think it sounds like a great and emotionally affecting adventure. I just wonder if it might be a little too long?
I wouldn't worry about that. I hear the series has fans that eat up entire books in like a single day.
Well, I guess that makes sense that fans would go through it quickly. I mean, how long would it really take a couple readers to go through it all in detail? And that really is the end of it. Next up, part two of discussing music with my wife. And then, depending on how quickly we can record on the first five chapters of The Princess Thieves, we also have a team-up with both Maureen and Dr. Skeels Jungius on some movies very close to his heart. To close us out, I call back to a different era of music, where a young man writes a song about trying to push forwards through depression into a better place. The opening lyrics made me think of Annie Oakley, whose death we need to try to find a way to recover from. Driving through the forest of the dead, with eternity's white flag before us, and God at every gate. Until next time, this is The Wallflowers with One Headlight.
She always had a pretty face.
right, here's the line that I need to nail. Actually, it's going to be super easy. Barely an inconvenience. I failed on the first take. Okay, how many of these have I listened to? How many times have I quoted this? Jeez. The minute you put a microphone in front of somebody, that's when they fold. That's when their weakness comes through. And you see what they're truly made of. Jelly and anxiety. These are the measures of a podcaster.